Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and not Jill Serkin.
Oh, Paul.
I know.
But she's sunning herself, isn't she? Where is she?
Ibiza.
There you go.
Yep, she is with the family. So I hope she's having a good time. In the first half of the show, we heard from Vivian Cottrell-Lee of Wildon Times and the Wildon Midsummer Wildon Fair.
Which I am now going to.
Which Simon has now bought tickets to. I was going anyway. Yeah, we're all going.
It's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to it.
It's a lovely, lovely event. You will. Yeah.
We're going to get a really good summer this year, apparently. So I'm really looking forward to getting
out. Well, it doesn't matter as long as the sun comes out on the 9th of June, 10th of June and the 11th of June. Apart from that, we don't care.
And also, it's got indoor marquees as well.
So it doesn't
raining,
matter. Yeah.
It's beautiful.
We'll have to stay inside and have a drink. That would be really depressing, wouldn't it? Just having to stay inside the tent and drink all afternoon. That would be awful.
And eat flapjacks.
Sparkling wine.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. One of us, I can't remember which of us, has got an email about wine as well. I've given Simon a couple of emails to read.
All right.
I don't know if you might have the email. While you're looking, I'm going to read a tweet. I've got a tweet from Paragon Drones.
Oh, yes, I can see it now.
Have you got it?
Yes.
Hi, Paul. It wouldn't be Tuesday without great interviews, banter, and, of course, the cheesy tunage. And a mention for us would be wonderful. Yeah, absolute pleasure. That's the lovely folks at Paragon Drones.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, I have a tweet for, Chips and Dinks, the lovely Bev and Tony. Are you on your lonesome today then, Vanilla Web? Is Jules taking a well-earned break? Well, something like that, yeah. She's skiving, is what she's doing.
She claims it's well-earned.
Yeah, I know, but it isn't.
Sitting here and having a chat's not exactly work, is it?
No, exactly. ZC Social Media, free to attend. If you're looking to learn how to grow your business online or just want to meet like-minded people, then join us at Chatham Town Football Club on the 9th of June. That's ZC Social Media.
Shall I read this this email now?
Yeah, go for it.
Right. Ever fancied owning your very own wine-producing business? Well, for £1.5 million, you can do just that. Artisan Sparkling.
We'll have a whip round in a minute.
Yeah. Vivian's got it in her back pocket.
Absolutely.
Mm. Artisan sparkling wine producer Barnsole, based in Staple between Canterbury and Sandwich, is being sold lock, stock, and barrel.
See what they did there. Lock, stock, and barrel.
Yeah, to Vinnie Jones after the current owners decided to retire. The award winning business has been run by Philip and Sally Watts for the last 10 years. Barnsole Vineyard is one of the oldest in Kent, with planting first started in 1993.
Wow.
Today it grows varieties including Chardonnay, Pinot Noir and Bacchus. It is also trialling Rutum Pinot, England's only indigenous vine, with the first wine expected to hit the shelves in 2024. It currently grows, picks, presses and bottles on site, offering a range of sparkling white and red wines. The property includes a recently upgraded purpose-built winery, which would allow production to increase from the current 20,000 bottles a year to 80,000 bottles a year.
Okay.
And it's yours for only £1.5 million.
Fantastic. Sounds good.
If we get that out of petty cash, Paul?
I'm sure we could find it down the back of the sofa or something.
Down the back of the sofa. We got that lying around.
Absolutely. It's fascinating, isn't it, that how a new industry has kind of sprung up over the last 20 or 30 years, and that Kent has become one of the great wine-producing parts of the world, not just in the UK. Chapel Down and all those kind of people, Hush Heath and Gusbourne, they've all won multiple awards, even up against French champagnes and sparkling wines.
I think it's back to chalk again, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think the chalky soil certainly helps.
Yeah.
And, of course, climate change has meant that vines do now grow a little more readily in English soil. But I may be wrong, and if there's proper wine people listening, I shall probably get flamed for this. But did I hear that there is now no French Chardonnay because they had some sort of blight in France, and they had to go and get all the grapes that they'd exported to Australia and to restock the vineyards in France with Australian grapes?
It wouldn't surprise me.
I don't know if it's true.
It wouldn't surprise me. And I also know that one of the big champagne houses, and I can't remember which one, owns vineyards in Kent now.
Well, it's a nice place to set up a vineyard, and you can buy one for £1.5 million.
It was one of the very well-known champagne houses, and I can't remember which one. I can't remember which one. Anyway, they own a big proportion of acreage on the North Downs.
I've heard it said, and I I'd claim no knowledge of wine at all, but I heard somebody say that English sparkling wine is particularly sought of, and in terms of its performance against other similar wines, you know, we make whites, we make reds, we make sparkling, but apparently our sparkling is relatively the best of our three possible outputs.
And this was part of the deal with this I can't remember who it was. Who were the big champagne makers?
Tattinger
bought a vineyard here after they lost a competition to an English sparkling wine producer.
Wow. But that's called thinking ahead, isn't it? I mean, that's really good planning.
Absolutely. And we do. I mean, Squarries.
Westrum.
Sorry?
In Westrum.
Yeah, in Westrum, massive producers of sparkling white sparkling wine.
Oh, and actually Balfour Wines as well. Yeah, do a lovely pink sparkling.
We're clearly on Vivian's specialist subject here. A lady who knows her champagne.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you spend your weekends doing? Whopping away.
Actually, I do like a Cremon from Lidl.
I didn't even know what that is.
Well, Cremon is a version of, it's the nearest area to champagne.
All right.
That you can get to in France. So it's a French wine, French sparkling, but it can't be called champagne because it's not from the champagne region.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's sold in Lidl. It's absolutely fantastic. £8.50, I think, currently.
Well, it's better than 50 quid a bottle for a bottle of Tattinger, so we'll go with that.
Exactly.
Shall I read this next email?
Yeah, go for it quickly.
So this is Maidstone Business Boost, networker event at Love Food at Lock Meadow this June. In-person networking is returning to Maidstone with its free, not-to-be-missed event on Tuesday, 7th June, from 12 until 2, with partners on hand to demonstrate the support they can offer. The event includes Lowcase, SeaCare Green Recovery Voucher, Business and IP Centre Kent, Tail, iConstruct, Hi3 Network, and loads of others. Whether you're looking for help with low-carbon initiatives, IT improvements, or simply a new product, businesses can expect to discover a wide range of beneficial programs. So go to Lock Meadow this June on Tuesday the 7th between 12 and 2.
Fantastic, thank you. I've had a tweet from Martin Reeves of Collector's Buddy. He said, I'm listening to the Business Bunker show in my loft. He's giving his loft a sort out. Well, I hope you don't get too warm up there. It'll be a bit warm up in the loft. Don't fall through the ceiling. And thank you, Martin. You can follow Martin on Twitter. Collector's Buddy is his Twitter handle. And there's Athel Bray. Enjoy the afternoon, Business Bunker team. We're delighted to be taking on three new trainers and coaches to add to our stable of associates. If anyone is interested in joining the team and has training experience, do get in touch. We're having to expand to meet the demand. You can follow them on Twitter, Athel Bray LTD. A-T-H-E-L-B-R-A-E LTD is their Twitter handle.
Seven Oaks Based, the Marker Study Group, has grown again after acquiring BGL Insurance. The deal has now secured regulatory approval, ushering in the ability to start the integration of the two firms. BGL Insurance, based in Peterborough, employs 1,700 people and adds to the 3,500 Marker Study that the group already employs. So it's a huge business.
It's growing like mad. They own a lot of different stuff as well. Yeah. They own the Tunbridge Wells Times, and they own Solomon's. Loads of stuff. DG East, talking about what I mentioned earlier, Renault have unveiled the Scenic Vision concept car, which is powered both by electric and hydrogen.
There you go. And you knew about that because you've read it before.
Yeah, absolutely.
Warners have got Jubilee celebrations. Business partners of the Chamber, Warners are delighted to host members and also wish to celebrate their own milestone 25 years in Sevenoaks. Join them for informal networking over a glass of wine and a special Jubilee-themed spread at the Tunbridge offices of Warners Solicitors to start the celebrations for the Clean's Platinum Jubilee. This is on Thursday, the 26th of May, so that makes it the day after
tomorrow. Friday,
Between 6 and 8. So that's Bank Street, Tunbridge. Free booze on Warner Solicitors. Get out there for a drink.
Absolutely. Have you seen this? I can't show it on the radio. It's a video. It's Jules.
It's Jules.
It's Jules.
Yeah, you can tell there's a stunning likeness, isn't there?
It's exactly.
Just incredible.
Yeah.
It's a chimpanzee that they're showing me. Yeah, sorry,
yeah.
Jules.
Yeah, but it's got Jules's hair around it. It's just incredible. Yeah, very lifelike. Very lifelike. It's incredible what they can do with the graphics these days, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's unbelievable. It's just being serious for a moment, with something like that, which looks unbelievable, it makes it very difficult to believe anything you see on social media anymore, because it's so manipulatable.
That's him. That word.
Yeah.
Which I think we both just made up.
But I think,
I wonder if it's in the Oxford Dictionary.
Exactly, yeah. But it's true, though, isn't it? Because, you know, graphics are just so clever nowadays, you can't tell what you're looking at.
No. And, I mean, this is this bit. I mean, we get back onto Partygate or Beergate or whatever. Mm. I was arguing on a very left-wing thread on Facebook before I went out, because it just came up in my feed and it just got me so cross. All they talk, one thing they want to talk about is Boris having a beer in Downing Street.
Yep.
In his own home, in the middle of a pandemic, where staff are working all round his house, mm-hmm. and he's got to sort of be sociable and say hello, because he's the captain of the team. He's supposed to do that. Mm. And it's this, but you broke the regulations. You had a party. No, I was up. Let me work. Mm. And there will be people listening to this who go, Webster, you're absolutely out of order. It's a disgrace. And I get it, but I'm not sure it's actually quite as legitimate a concern as many people are shouting about.
I actually got into trouble with this, because I pointed out that every single person involved from start to finish in the production of these rules have broken them at some point. Yeah. The Tory party, the Labour party, SNP, the Lib Dems have all had people fined for breaking lockdown rules. The guy that invented the whole thing that started this, Ferguson, got done for breaking lockdown rules. Yeah. Dominic Cummings, who persuaded the Prime Minister to go for lockdown, broke the lockdown. There's not a single part of the establishment that haven't broken the lockdown rules, so I'm not really sure why they keep going on about it. And on top of all that, so did the media.
And while we're on the subject, and I mean, I will put my hand up and say I broke lockdown rules. Now, I was careful, I was sensible, I tried not to go around the place. Everybody around here is saying, no, they didn't. They didn't. You didn't break the rules at all?
No.
Not even slightly. Not even slightly.
I'll tell you what, this is how sad I am, right? I can't remember at what point it is, because I've lost the plot on it. I was in France in the very early days of the pandemic, okay? I was in France visiting my grandson, and we were due to come home. We drove, and we were due to come back via the tunnel, via Calais, on the Saturday morning. And this is how shocked I was, because at that point we didn't know the government were in total control of everybody's technology. I got a text from the British government in France at 11 o'clock on Friday evening saying, we understand you have a booking to come back tomorrow. If you fail to come back before 5 a.m., you will have to quarantine for 14 days when you get back. Okay? So we loaded the car and drove like a bat out of hell. I got 4 speeding tickets on the way back, and we got to Calais at 5:15.
Oh.
And we came home, and I sat indoors for 14 days.
Yeah, that's sad.
It's sad, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Mm. I mean, yeah, we could do a whole show about this, but we would never get any work done.
We wouldn't, no. Anyway, so that was that. Do you know what? I don't want to talk about that anymore. Do you know what I want to do?
Go on, what do you want to do, Paul?
I want to talk to Simon.
Oh, you want to talk to me?
I want to talk to Simon about finances.
Oh, all right. What do you want to know about finances, Paul?
Well, I haven't got any.
You didn't save enough, mate.
It's a pleasure to have Simon back here on the show. Simon Webster, known colloquially amongst all of his friends as the Money Talk Guru. But also, he's with Talis IFA, Independent Financial Advisors.
Based in Ashford, indeed.
And based in Ashford, indeed.
And celebrating 30 years in various guises this very year.
Really? Are you having a party?
Well, we haven't had a party, but we are sponsoring the Kent Classical Concert
At
Leeds Castle, so we're doing that.
Okay. Are you inviting customers?
We are inviting some customers. Yeah.
It looks like Viv and I are both customers.
have to be a customer.
Oh, I am a customer.
Yeah, Paul actually customer. Paul actually is a customer. Would you like to come, Paul?
Yes, please.
All right, well, you can come. Would you like to bring Amanda?
Yeah, yes, please.
All right, well, I've just sold two tickets.
Well, you don't have to sell her a ticket. She works there.
All right, okay. Well, all right. That's good. I have to find out who to give the other odd ticket to, but we'll get it. We'll sort it out. You're on. All right.
Cool. Anyway, sorry about that.
No, not a problem.
So give us a quick overview of the kind of work that TANIS does, and then we'll talk about some of the issues around it.
Well, in the trade, we refer to ourselves as general practice financial advisors, independent financial advisors. So broadly speaking, we do investments, we do retirement planning, we do actual dedicated financial planning, which we might talk about a little bit later on. We do protection, which is sort of life insurance, critical illness insurance, health insurance, which lots of people overlook but should have. We do mortgages. So we do pretty much everything financial. We generally say if it's money and it moves, we do it or know somebody who does.
Right.
We try and avoid doing people's tax returns because we delegate that to accountants.
Right.
But we, generally speaking, we spend a lot of our time just helping people invest their money.
Yep.
And I don't actually think as a discipline it's been more important in my career than now.
Mm-hmm.
Because the big issue is if you're sitting on £100,000 today, a nice round number I've picked purely for mathematical purposes, and you've got 10% inflation, then next year, in 1 year's time, you have the spending power of 90,000 quid. So you've lost £10,000. Now, if you put it on deposit, you might have got 1%, if you're lucky, 1.5% with interest rates going up a bit. But that's it.
Yeah.
So effectively, the safe haven for cash for as long as I've been around is effectively a guarantee of losing money. We used to say a guarantee of losing money fairly slowly, but now actually losing money quite quickly, because if we have 10% inflation in the following year, which we may, but I think is a lot less likely, you could lose 20% of your spending power over 2 or 3 years. And that is a really big hit.
Yeah.
And if you said to anybody, can you afford to lose 20 or 30% of your spending power in real terms? That's a big deal. Everybody's justifiably worried about the fact that prices are going up really hard and actually making ends meet if you're living on your wages is a big issue. But there's an issue at the other end of the spectrum, which is people who are living on their savings are having exactly the same problem for similar reasons. So we're spending a lot of our time talking to people about investing in real stuff that's got some hope of keeping pace-ish with inflation, although getting 10% in the current market is pretty blooming challenging.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at least it's going to be more than 2 or 3% or 1 or 2% from cash. And so we're doing a lot of that at the moment. It seems to be a big subject that a lot of people are thinking about.
It's interesting, isn't it? And I hold my hands up here of being exactly the same. Years ago, as a young man, I didn't bother about savings. I'm going to live forever. I don't need that. You know, I need to buy a house, or I need to go on holiday, or I need to buy a new Porsche or whatever.
You got to get your priorities right. Get the Porsche first.
Exactly. But as youngsters, we kind of don't think that far into the future, which is a shame, because even a small amount of money saved then, by the time you need it, has
made a huge difference.
Yeah.
Albert Einstein once described compound interest as the most powerful force in the universe.
Yeah.
And actually, it really is, because you've got this sort of upwards curve, the graph of x squared, or a parabola for the mathematicians amongst us, and it really does make a huge difference. So if you put 50 quid away and leave it there for 30 years, it's worth a hell of a lot more at the end of it.
There were some people used to use a chessboard as an example. You put a grain of rice on the first square, double it.
Yeah.
By the time you get to the last square, you've got like 14 billion tons of rice.
Absolutely. And it really does make a huge difference. So we're the interesting thing, and I mean we just happened to be in the right place at the right time in TANIS, because we went into lockdown with 20 people in our business and we've come out with 35.
Wow.
And we're actually making money for ourselves and money for our clients. And that's been spectacular for us. Now, a large part of the reason is right place, right time. A number of our colleagues closed down. I said, oh, there's a pandemic. We can't work. We'll pull up the drawbridge. And my business partner and I said, no, we're not going to do that. We'll send all the staff home with the office computers.
Yeah.
all our back office and all the stuff that we do is on the internet. So as long as you've got broadband, more than 8 meg, you can.
Have you got broadband, Simon?
Yeah, we got more, but 500 megabits per second, Paul. Yeah, it's great.
I don't care.
Yeah, well, I didn't have it that like that during the pandemic, I have to say. But we sent all our people home with their office computers tucked under their arm,
right.
Plugged it into their home broadband. We had to give a couple of them routers and sort out their internet so they could actually work from home. We moved our phones in the second month of the pandemic over to IP telephones. Yep. We were on ISDN. We were going to change it anyway.
You had to change anyway because everyone's changing, yeah, except they've stopped.
Well, they're stopping 2025, 2025, 26. It's going soon. So we moved to IP phones straight away. Yeah. So we got that moved. Mm. So effectively, we were able to work remotely throughout the pandemic. And then the recruitment agencies kept phoning us up and saying, we've got this financial advisor who's looking for a job. And nobody's hiring. Are you hiring? I said, yeah, we can see it. We'll see him on Teams. So we actually hired, I think it was 3 or 4 financial advisors that we never met in person.
Right.
We only interviewed them on Teams.
Yep.
We didn't even know if they had legs or trousers or anything.
Yep.
But we were able to see their professional qualifications. We were able to give them appropriate assessments to make sure they were still competent. We did all the necessary paperwork stuff and everything else. But the interview and the interpersonal stuff we were able to do online. And while it's not as good as meeting somebody in person, it was good enough.
Yep.
And that enabled us to build the business and add some extra people, and it stood us in very good stead. Mm. So we've actually now got critical mass where people are actually saying, Talis is a halfway serious financial services company. Can I come and work with you? And it's just becoming feeding its own publicity.
Absolutely.
Which has been great.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's great with our clients. So we're in a position to celebrate our 30th birthday. We've got clients who've been with us for 30 of those 30 years, which is a fantastic thing.
Mm.
And we're doing a few things to celebrate this year, and it's been cool. Quite nice.
I'm trying to think how long I've been with you. Not that long. But
36 or 7.
At least, yeah.
Yeah, maybe more. Well, time flies when you're enjoying something. Actually, it probably is about 7 or 8, actually, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I stopped my radio show about 2 years ago, mm-hmm. and I've been with the station all that time.
Yeah.
So it's got to be something like that. Yeah, yeah, a while.
Yeah, yeah.
We've done all right for you.
Have you?
I think so. Huh. Even if I say so myself. Well, you're still there and still paying the bill, mate. So you must. Well,
I know I'm still paying the bill. Yeah, yeah.
So yeah,
but that's a serious point as well, though, isn't it? Because even though I'm incredibly old now, I haven't drawn down on my pension yet. Not my private pension. I have my state pension. Whoa. But you know, those kind of investments, those equity investments, can go up and down.
Yeah.
And the whole point is not to panic.
No, absolutely. Well, I mean, there's two stories there, actually. Mm. We'll do the first story about markets go up and markets go down. After 40-plus years in financial services, that's the one thing I've learned. Markets go down, markets go up.
There's no flies on him, is there? You know, he's on the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. But I do this little routine with my mobile phone, which I pretend I've covered in platinum.
Right.
And suddenly my mobile phone is now worth 100,000 quid. If the price of platinum goes up by 50%, my mobile phone's then worth £150,000.
Yeah.
How much money have I made? Precisely nothing, because I've still got the mobile phone. I haven't sold it to anybody. I've made nothing. All that's happened is a number has changed on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Same thing applies if the price of platinum halves and my mobile phone is now suddenly worth £75,000. How much money have I lost? Precisely nothing. I've still got the mobile phone.
Hmm.
And eventually history tells us it'll be worth 150 and more at some stage in the future. So all my clients have heard me tell this story because I tell it every perishing day because it's for me, it just makes the point quite well. So people don't panic because they know that markets go down and markets go up and eventually it's going to come good again, we hope.
You're absolutely right. And just as an aside, because I wish I didn't, but I keep arguing with people on Twitter about this kind of nonsense. We really, really need better education in the basics of finances.
Yes, we do.
We really do. The amount of idiots on Twitter that go, so-and-so's a billionaire, they ought to pay more tax, and they go, they haven't got £1 billion, mate. All they've got is some assets that are valued at that. In order to have the money, they'd have to sell the assets, and you can't, you know, it's just a book value. It doesn't even mean that that's what they get if they sold the assets. So how are you going to tax that?
Yeah.
And they don't understand, you know, they just go, oh, he's got £1 billion. Well, that's not fair. I'm broke.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah.
And I'm desperately trying to think of what the other thing I was going to say. There were two things I was going to say, and you've got to remind me what it was that I was going to say, because it's totally gone. And I should have written a note down, so I remind myself.
Well, we were talking about equity investments going up and down.
We were talking about that, but we also talked about pensions,
yeah,
and people hanging on to pensions for a long time. And actually, this is a really important point, and I'm very pleased you brought it up.
You're telling me off now, for me.
No, yeah. I'm not actually, because you're doing exactly the right thing. Because I realise that this will only interest maybe a quarter of our listenership, but a lot of people in the world, I suspect. And that is that pensions have ceased to become a vehicle for providing income in retirement. You imagine that's what they are, because when you and I were growing up,
yep,
it was put your money in your pension, you get to 65, they give you a gold watch and you draw your pension, and that, yep, and that was it.
Yep.
Well, there's this marvellous thing called inheritance tax. And inheritance tax takes 40% of every penny you have if your asset base is over £1 million. Mm. Now, I realise that there's lots of people that would dream of having half of that, never mind the £1 million. But for the people that do, tax at 40% is a huge chunk of their estate going to the tax man rather than the kids. So what we're saying to people, you've got £1 million house and £400,000 worth of savings and a pension plan, spend the £400,000. Why? Because you can pass your pension to your children totally free of tax outside of your estate, and they just get the whole perishing lot. Mm. So effectively, you spend your savings and get a discount from the tax man of 40p in the pound. Mm. So you, Mr. Andrew, sir, are doing exactly the right thing, because effectively you've got your pension set up. I believe it's so your kids get the money when you eventually pop your clogs or whatever, and they will get that money. Mm. But you live on your other assets, and then that's less tax that will be paid by your estate when you die. It's got to be a win.
Yeah,
got to be a win.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because I was arguing with people about pensions yesterday as well.
Which argument were you making?
This was mostly about state pensions and people claiming they were ripped off and were trying to... what it was is because the government have changed the rules on pension, and there's a new state pension now.
Yes.
And the new state pension... I don't know why I know this stuff. It's just
you talk
sad.
To me too much.
Yeah, but you only get the new state pension if you were born after April the 5th, 1951. And there was somebody going on and on and on about, oh, I don't get that, I don't get that much pension. And I went, well, how old are you? Oh, no. And I said, how old are you? And it's 72. I went, that's why. Yeah, because you were born after 1951. How do you know that? Because you're 72. And if you look at the government website, you get the old pension, not the new pension.
Yeah.
And you've got the WASPies as well, which are the women that got their pensions stolen.
They really got hurt. My wife is actually one of them, as it happens.
Yeah.
But the bit that everybody forgets, and I don't know, fair doesn't come into this. It's just economics, which is a really harsh mistress. Mm. But the reality is, in the old days, when the state pension was introduced in 1945, you retired at 65 and you were dead at 70.
So,
your life expectancy was 5 years.
Yeah.
And the state had to provide a pension income on average for 5 years. And everybody knew the rules and you were taxed accordingly and it worked. Those of us sitting in this room are likely to live, well, Vivian and I are anyway, probably going to live to 85, 90, whatever. Mm. But that's now our realistic life expectancy. And women actually live longer than men anyway.
Yep.
So you've got this situation where general taxation is supposed to support a state pension that lasted 5 years when it was introduced and is now going to have to pay out for 20 or 25 years on average going forward.
Mm.
And the only way you can actually sustain that level of pension income is to raise the state pension age, which is what they've done, decrease the accrual rate, which they've actually reversed. They put it up, which have made it more expensive for themselves, or find some other way of playing with it.
Yeah.
And the reality is they didn't have a huge amount of choice because there's just not enough money in the economy to support that level of pensions. Now, it's not fair, but given the choice between being dead or having a slightly less good pension, I think I'll settle for the slightly less good pension.
Mm. Pensions are one of those horrible things, though, for politicians because they're so long-term.
Yes.
So it's not something that you can just change on a whim and go, you know, as from Monday, we're going to do this. Because you've got a lot of people who have gone, hold on a minute, I just spent 50 years doing that. Mm. And now you've just taken it away.
Yeah.
I mean, because, of course, their big answer to this is workplace pensions, where they've passed the issue back to employers
again. Yes, they have.
Yeah. And we have to fund a pension now as well.
Yes.
For my, again, it was another Twitter argument I was having, where I said, if the government, if a politician, a government, not the government, but a government, some point in the past, had actually woken up and realised what was going on, what we should have done was hypothecated national insurance and put it into an investment, yeah? So that state pensions were an investment, not just general taxation.
It would have been great if they had done that. And hypothecated is a lovely word. Mm. Spun it off and put it somewhere else, effectively.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there is no forward-funded money in the UK state pension at all.
Yeah.
So the taxes that you and I are paying from our income today is funding Grant. Your mum's pension is being funded by the yours, actually.
And
my wife's. Mm. It's being funded now by the taxes that are being paid by those of us still at work. And,
of course,
some of us still retired. And, I mean, the truth is now, the state pension is actually, due to the triple lock, it's actually quite generous. Because at $9,500 a year, which is give or take where it is now, you've got two people on $9,500 a year. That's $19,000 a year. If you've got no accommodation costs because you own your own home, then $19,000 a year is getting to the point that that is livable. And, you know, there are a lot of people now who are paying travel to and from work and a mortgage out of the national average wage, which is $25,000, $28,000 a year, whatever it is now. And her net take-home pay is less than that of somebody who's retired.
Yeah.
So in point of fact, the state pension has gone from being a national disgrace to actually halfway reasonable. Now, there are a lot of people saying, I'm struggling to pay my heating bill on this fixed income. And that's a fair argument. And that's a separate debate.
Yeah.
But relative to where it was only a few years ago, 5,000 or 6,000 a year, it's gone up hugely over the last few years.
I don't know why I spend my life arguing about these things, but it just really annoys me when people don't understand a subject and then pontificate about it without knowing even the basics of something. And for some bizarre reason, I've never been an accountant or been interested in this, but having been in business so long, you kind of learn stuff, don't you?
You don't have a choice.
Yeah, about taxes and all the rest of it. And the amount of nonsense that people talk about taxes and stuff like that without even mentioning which tax they're talking about. You know, people ought to pay more tax. Well, which one? Yeah, there's dozens of them. Again, one of the issues that raised itself on social media the other day was the fact that in France, the pension is €26,000 a year.
Is it? I didn't know.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the standard state pension. And they go, oh, in France it's 26,000, here it's 9,000. Yeah. Well, how much did they pay for it? What? How much did they pay in to get 26,000? And if you want a 26,000 pension, why don't you pay the difference into a pension fund? What do you mean? Well, in France, they have a thing on top of their taxes, which is a pension contribution on top of their tax and on top of their national insurance, and it's 16% of their earnings. Yeah, why don't you take 16% of your earnings and put it in a pension fund?
You can get more than 26,000.
You'd end up with more than 26,000 quid.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's the government's job, mate.
Yeah, and that's always the way. It's somebody else's problem.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about tax, I tell this story regularly, and I've told it on this show before, is I went to a school to do a sort of talk to kids about finance. And we were sort of saying, well, let's look at real-world economics. When you leave school, how much are you going to be earning?
Yeah.
And these 16-year-old girls, because it was a local girls' school, were saying, well, I'll be making about $35,000 a year. And I said, oh, that's interesting. Unqualified, no experience, maybe some A-levels. You think you're going to get $35,000 a year? The average wage at the time in Ashford for grown-ups was $18,000.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, so you're going to get double what the average person with you ain't. So let's pretend you actually manage to get 18,000 a year because you'll be well educated and have some skills. So maybe you get 18. And we actually walked through how much they would pay in tax and national insurance. And I actually said, so you earn 18,000, you pay that much to the government in tax and national insurance. And a girl from the back actually spoke out loud. She said, that's disgraceful. And she was absolutely shocked. And I said, well, your dad's paying your school fees out of income that suffered tax at 40% plus national insurance, and you just saw the penny drop. But they don't get it because it's not taught in schools, and it drives me nuts, absolutely nuts.
Without a doubt, you know, if you look at the overall level of taxation and you take into account everything we do, I read somewhere where most of us pay something like, you know, even people on minimum taxation, we're all paying out something like 60% of our earnings in one tax or another.
Yep.
You know, when you take council tax, income tax,
VAT,
you know, 60% of every penny you've ever earned goes straight back to the government.
Yeah.
You know, and at the moment we're in this debate about windfall taxes on energy companies, which is the stupidest debate I've ever heard in my life, because they haven't even done the basic arithmetic on that. But when you look at, you know, when you go, you know, people moaning about Shell and BP making huge profits and how much petrol costs, and you go, 71% of everything you pay at a pump is tax. The petrol costs nothing. Mm, yeah, what you're paying is just tax.
Yeah.
And people don't understand because it's buried. You know, a lot of these taxes are buried in something else because they're duties and
insurance
stuff.
Insurance premium tax, yeah. Cigarette duties, yeah. Stamp duty.
Yes.
But I mean, I think the government spends 40% of the money that's circulating in the economy. I haven't got the figure in front of me, so I might be wrong on that. But it's a very, very significant proportion of the amount of money in the economy. Yeah. And of course, when you think about it, you've got people at work paying tax and loads of people drawing money out of the system. It's got to come from somewhere. And yeah. How do you balance that? You've still got the health service. The health service is arguably underfunded. I mean, most people would say it's radically underfunded, but that, you know, we could have that debate separately because you've done the management consultancy piece on it and I haven't. It burns a lot of cash, whichever way you look at it.
£1 billion every 2 days.
Yeah, a scary, scary number. Mm. But they still couldn't find a bed for me when I had when I was ill last year. I'm not going to go into any more details than that because we don't want to keep doing medical expenses. So it's very interesting that, you know, that there's potholes in our roads.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much infrastructure that needs to be done. We don't have enough bypasses in different places. People say we have too many. But there's all sorts of things. There is a bottomless pit of need because we now have this idea that everybody has a right to a mobile phone, to be able to have takeaway 3 times a week, to be able to have, you know, there is a right to accommodation. Yep. There is a right to own your own home. I don't understand that logic. There is no right. Mm. You know, arguably you have a right to breathe and you have a right to walk around the country without being harassed by the state.
Yep.
Beyond that, what rights do we have? And it's a very, we only have those rights that society decides to dispense. But people have this idea that they have a right to the latest set of trainers at £200 a pair.
Yeah.
And not have to work for it.
Yeah.
And to me, that's just anathema. I thought I'd use a good word. I'd say that. I'd drop that in front of an editor. I thought I'd go on.
Anathema. I've heard of Adidas and Nike. I've not heard of
anathema. Yeah.
Anathema trainers.
Yeah.
No, you're right. And, you know, I'm frustrated. So, you know, I do a program in schools called 30-30. It's a program I take into schools free of charge. We take 30 businesses in to talk to 30 A-level students. And I don't blame the students. I don't blame the teachers. You know, the fact is, though, our education system isn't fit for purpose. We don't teach things that are practically useful.
Hear.
Yeah. You know, we do GCSEs. And you go, well, that's great, but
teach them coding. They'll get a job in making Pixar movies.
Yeah.
No, they won't.
Yeah.
You know, but when I again, another story I've told on this show before, but it just still cracks me up. I had a girl working for me who had a 2-1 in law, and my wife gave her some expenses to put in a spreadsheet and add up. So she entered them in the spreadsheet, and then she got a calculator and added up the row of numbers in the spreadsheet with the calculator, because she didn't know how to use a spreadsheet and she didn't know what a spreadsheet was for. So this girl, lovely though she was, had been through the whole of our education system and got a 2-1 from a moderate university, and she didn't know what a spreadsheet was or how to use it. Now, that, to me, is just a massive failure in the education system. They should be able to use the basic Microsoft Office products, or the Google equivalent. I'm not biased particularly. Yeah. But at least they'd have some understanding of the stuff that people expect them to use.
We don't do practical stuff.
No, we don't.
We just don't do practical stuff as part of our education. You know, there's been controversy this week about cooking and stuff, without getting involved in the, you know, in the 30p meal or whatever. But basic cooking skills are important.
Yes.
Yeah, whatever you cook. I don't care what you cook, as long as you know how to cook something. Changing a plug is important.
Yeah.
Opening a bank account is important. Yeah.
The trouble that a Tory MP got into for saying people don't actually know how to cook or budget. Well, it's your job to have made it easier and more affordable for them. Yeah, but also people, that's given. But you can actually budget. You can make a meal for 30p. You can do a baked potato with some stuff. You don't have to go out and buy £5 worth of McDonald's or more. You can actually do a meal for 30p. And that's actually nutritious. I mean, in the Irish potato famine, families were surviving on a potato each a day. I mean, nobody would want to live like that. And I'm not suggesting anybody today should remotely. But there are ways that most people of a certain age who've grown up learning to cook things from scratch and what makes my wife batch cooks for us to this day. I can afford to go out and eat takeaway every night. I mean, I'm not really flash, I'm just in a very fortunate position later in my career. But my wife batch cooks. My lunch at work is minestrone soup that my wife racks up in a big pot at the weekend. She puts it into a series of used Chinese containers. I defrost one at lunchtime, and I have that. It costs 15p.
Yeah.
And that is the cost of my lunch. The guy that's just started work for us goes out to get a meal deal and thinks he's done well when he's only spent £3.50 on his lunch. Mine cost me 15p. You know, and it's this sort of stuff. And people say, why have you got no money at the end of the weekend?
I'm going to tell you a story.
Go on then.
And this was a long time ago. As you may recall, or you may not, I used to work for Goldman Sachs.
I did recall that. Banks.
Yeah. And we had a lad that came to work for us, an American lad, that had graduated summa cum laude from Harvard, which is the equivalent of a double first. Yeah. And he graduated with a summa cum laude in maths and physics. Okay. And Jonathan, his name was, and he came to work for us. I was head of IT. He came to work for us, and he was writing automated trading systems.
Okay.
And this was in the early 80s, okay? Right. So it was all very new stuff, and we were kind of at the forefront of automated trading systems. And he'd only been there a week or so, and I walked up to his floor, and he was sat there, and I walked past him, I thought, what's he eating? And I went back, oh, what you got there, Jonathan? And he went, oh, it's brilliant, London. I really like London. He said, they sell vegetarian hot dogs. What? And he held up this hot dog bun. And I went, oh, what did you pay for that? It was only £1. This was about 1982, right?
So that was proper money.
That was a lot of money, yeah.
When £1 was a green note.
Yep. not quite, but yeah. He had a hot dog bun with a carrot in it. And I went, you're having a laugh. And he went, no, it's a vegetarian hot dog.
A fool and his money is soon parted. And the constituent parts cost 15p.
You paid £1 for a carrot in a bun. And he went, yeah, but you can't get... He was from Chicago. You can't get vegetarian hot dogs in Chicago.
Can't buy buns and carrots. I mean, this is a problem for very intellectual people who are very focused on their chosen subject.
Yeah.
Sometimes practical stuff just totally and utterly escapes them because nobody's ever taught it to them.
The second funny story about Jonathan. I'm sorry, Jonathan. He's probably the head of Goldman Sachs now. But the second funny story about him was really hilarious. In the machine area, where all the heavy-duty technology was, so not in a public area.
Where the computers and the big tape reels.
Although, they weren't, even then, they weren't. But it had an electronic door, and we all wore a thing on our belt that emitted a signal, as long as you were authorised, yeah? So you walk up to the door would open, and you walk in, yeah? And so
Star Trek.
I've walked up to the door, door's open, I've walked in, the door shut behind me, he's walked smack into the door,
oh.
And he hasn't got a token. And it was hilarious watching him try and get through this door. He's trying to leverage the door open, he's banging, and I'm going, no. And he's like, And so I walk out again, and he went, how did you do that? I went, watch, it's magic. I said, it's the thought, you have to use thought transference, Jonathan. Right. So I said, you stand there, otherwise you'll get in the way of my thought waves. And I walk up to the door, and I go, open. And it goes, zoom, and I walk in. And he came charging by me and smacked straight into the door again.
Mr. Andrews, you're positively evil, sir.
I know. Back to Talis IFA and the extraordinary good work that you do.
Thank you.
you know, we've talked quite a lot about pensions. We've talked about savings. Just finish off. We've not got very long now, Simon. Just finish off on your thoughts and feelings on where we are. You know, we're looking at 9% inflation. We're looking at high energy bills. You know, we're up that famous river without a paddle right at the moment. Where are we going? Where's things heading? What do you see coming?
That's a $64,000 question. Mm. If I knew the answer, I'd probably be on a beach in the Bahamas rather than sitting here talking to you in a radio show. But I think the answer is we have had a step change in prices caused by Mr. Putin stepping into a country that wasn't his.
Yep.
And we've lost energy, we've lost oil, we've got electricity prices. All these prices have gone up significantly. Mm. But we've had that shock. We may see some of those prices ease slightly as the offsets come in, as we find cheaper sources of power, as we manage to get the oil price down a bit, and they put the strategic reserves into the system. So we might see some easing of prices. But once we've had that big step, this is going to be the new reality, and we're just going to have to get used to it, that it's that price. Mm. Over the next 2 or 3 years, people's wages will hopefully catch up. Mm. And they probably will, because, of course, we've got full employment in the UK at the moment. So if you want to recruit staff, you're going to have to pay more money to get them, because there are lots of employers in the market seeking skilled staff.
1.3 million unfilled vacancies right at the moment.
Yeah, and only about 500,000 people seeking jobs, seriously.
Well, for the first time in history, we've got more jobs than we have people unemployed. Yeah.
And that is a very interesting position. And so it will be quite... It'll be very interesting to see politically what the government do about it, because, of course, they got elected on a controlled immigration, stop people coming in, get rid of the open borders, which actually effectively were self-regulating, because when there were enough jobs, people stopped coming. When the jobs had been filled, people stopped coming because there's nothing for them to do. Mm. Now we've actually got an artificial gate. People want to come in. We're not letting them come in. We've created the jobs, and now there's nobody to do them. So at some point, we're probably going to end up with a points-based immigration system that's going to allow the right people to come in to do some of these jobs.
Yep.
But a lot of them are at the unskilled end of the spectrum, the poorly paid end of the spectrum, that were traditionally done by seasonal workers that came over from the Eastern Europe. Mm. And we've closed the door to them. And that's going to, how that works out over the next year or two is going to be very, very interesting. Mm. I mean, you were very pro-Brexit. I was slightly against Brexit. I see some of the advantages of Brexit, although very few other people do. Some of these unintended consequences, it's going to be interesting to see how those pan out over the next 5 years. Mm. And we could do a whole show just looking at that as a separate conversation.
Absolutely. The whole employment sector, because, you know, it's not even about Brexit, because it's actually worse in Europe. Yeah. At the moment, there's over 100,000 hospitality vacancies in France. They can't get staff either. So, you know, it's a bigger issue than that. We haven't got much time, but basically there's a big phenomenon going on called the I Quit phenomenon, the Great Resignation. In the UK, 600,000 people have taken themselves out of the job market in the last year. There are 600,000 people that aren't unemployed, although they haven't got a job. They're not registered as unemployed. They're not collecting universal credit, and they're just living off their savings.
Interesting.
And in America, it's 4 million people have done that. In Germany, 2 million people have done that. So it's a phenomenon across the Western world as well, as a fallout of the pandemic, basically.
And people liking being at home and just saying, actually, I can make it work. I didn't think I could, and now I can. The fact is gone.
I've worked out how to be at home, how to not earn any money, how to not waste any money. You've got a lot of downsizing going on, people flogging their houses and downsizing, people living on their savings, people taking early retirement. 600,000 people have removed themselves from the job market in the UK. But it's a European-wide issue, and the staffing issue is a European-wide issue as well. Although they've got higher unemployment across the EU, they still have the same issues. They haven't got staff.
Yeah, and of course, the other issue is post-pandemic, the demand has spiked again, and that the global supply chain issues. Mm. We've got a shortage of lorry drivers in the UK, but that is European and North American-wide. Yeah. So it's probably very much that same thing, people taking themselves out of the workplace.
Absolutely. There's all kinds, as you say, there's scope for a show or two in all of that alone. But we've reached the end of this show.
Oh, what
a shame. Before we go, we need you to find out how you can give your pension work and get your financial advice from Simon and his team. So what's your website, Simon?
TalisIFA.com. TA1LIS ifa.com.
That is all over the Kent Business Radio website, both on the homepage and in the advertising sector and in the sponsorship sector. Indeed. So you can find it in all of those places.
And you might find us in the Wealden paperwork shortly. We'll see.
The Wealden Times.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for that, Simon.
Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. I just need to follow up on a couple of things that are going on. Gravesham Business Network, on the 14th of June, the Gravesham Business Network meets. It's open to all SMEs in the area, so come and join us. Our summer business networking event will be held at the new Legion Rooms venue as part of the India Supper Club for those who love authentic Indian Punjabi cuisine.
Whoa.
Whether you're an established local business, have just started, or are new to the area, please do come along and enjoy an evening of local networking at one of Gravesend's most prestigious venues. The last business network that we ran had over 80 attendees. If you want to find out all this and all the other events that are happening, kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar.
We'll check that out.
Absolutely. Why not join Sue Hainsby and keynote speaker Gemma Fairclough-Haynes for a Women in Business brunch.
Ooh.
On the 9th of June at the Burlington Hotel in Folkestone. Again, you can find the details by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar.
And the Burlington is quite nice.
It's lovely. It's Dan San Giuseppe's gaff, and it's a very nice hotel, and it's a great place to have the Women in Business brunch. So do get along. Classic cars, chart-topping music and food, motor on down to the Bettshanger Country Park.
I'm going on Saturday.
Are you? The Deal Classic Car Show is back at Bettshanger on Saturday the 28th of May. From 10 a.m. to 9 p.m, 700 beautiful vehicles will be on display, showcasing the best of vintage British cars and motorcycles. Four-time Brit Award nominees and one of the biggest acts of the noughties, Top Loader, will be performing their classic song, including global hit Dancing in the Moonlight.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So, get along to that. But I think we've reached the end of another show. I just want to say a huge thank you to my two guests, Vivian Cockrell. I can't speak. What is it?
Go on, Vivian
Cottrell Lee.
There you go.
Of the Wealden Times and the Wealden Times Midsummer Fair.
Excellent.
And Simon Webster of Talis IFA. Thank you so much for participating in the show. It's been a pleasure to talk to you both.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
It's been great fun.
Huge thank you to DG East for sponsoring today's show, and for Talis IFA, of course.
Well, thank you.
And all of our other sponsors. We do appreciate it. You do keep us going. Thank you very much. We'll be back with another show next week. She's still not back.
She was off next week as well.
Yeah, she's having 2 weeks off. It's not right, is it?
No.
Anyway, we will soldier on without her, but regardless. But have a fantastic week, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to the Business Bunker Show. We thoroughly